Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine, North Carolina History for Students. Today I'll be reading from the Fall 2020 issue, Volume 60, Number 1, Where We Live, Architecture and Historic Preservation. And the first article today will be The Exciting Discovery of North Carolina's Oldest Dated House by Reed Thomas, who is a restoration specialist for the North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office. He provides technical restoration assistance to hundreds of private and public projects in 18 counties. Do you enjoy problem solving or mysteries? Architectural historians often must decipher, decode, or figure out clues from a building to figure out its age and any other facts about it. Was it always this size and shape? Was it enlarged? Have you ever looked at a building and wondered when it was built, who constructed it, and who lived in the home? How does one go about determining the age of a building? What clues can you look for to figure out changes that different owners made over time? The discovery. Skilled restoration carpenter Wayne Griffin got quite a surprise while making repairs inside a small house in Edenton in Chowan County in 2009. While prying off damaged wall paneling, Griffin was amazed to discover a large timber post and a peg, all covered with a heavy coating of whitewash. He thought that the house he was repairing was about 90 years old based on its exterior and interior appearance. So did the new owners, Steve and Linda Lane. The house was also similar in size to other houses in the neighborhood, which were built in the early 1900s. Griffin expected to find a lightweight framing system nailed together called balloon framing. Instead, he found this older method, hand-cut large timber posts that were assembled with mortise and tenon joints, secured with pegs. The framing system is the skeleton of a house. Interior walls and exterior siding, whether brick or wood, are the skin. Balloon frame construction was the common framing system used after the Civil War, from 1861 to 1865, and Griffin wondered why it wasn't used in this supposedly 90-year-old house. It was Griffin's discovery and his curiosity about the heavy timber frame post, peg, and whitewash, an early form of paint made from burning oyster shells, that would spark a lot of interest in this building. It would also change the owner's plans to turn it into a rental home. The Lanes were excited about the discovery and sought guidance from the restoration branch of the North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office. Like Griffin, the Lanes were curious about the age of the house. They wanted to understand more about the building before the repairs were finished and the framing was covered back up. Architectural investigation. Who were the original owners of the Edenton home? Who was the builder? What did the house look like after construction? To help the Lanes unravel some of the mysteries of the Edenton house, Restoration Branch staff invited volunteers with a wide range of knowledge and many differing skills to participate in a day-long architectural investigation, or study visit. The volunteer team included architectural historians, craftspeople, and historians. Like detectives, the team explored all visible parts of the house. They took notes, measurements, and photographs. Some of the more adventurous ones climbed into the dusty attic and crawled under the house into a cramped crawl space. It sits low to the ground. Although covered in cobwebs and dirt, these volunteers emerged with smiles on their faces. They found not only the same timber framing system Griffin discovered, but also spotted hand-wrought nails used in the original construction of the house. Hand-wrought nails were made one at a time by blacksmiths in a forge. A revolutionary change in the way nails were made occurred in the late 1700s with the invention of machine-cut nails. By the early 1800s, machine-cut nails were becoming readily available for builders and they were less expensive. The discovery of hand-wrought nails suggested that the house probably was dated during the wrought nail period, used up to around 1810 in the Edenton area. The first clue, based on the framing system and the nails, the building was built before 1810. Toward the end of the day, the team gathered to discuss what everyone had learned about the house. While the exact age of the building remained a mystery, all agreed that the Lane's house likely dated back 200 years or more. Yet no one knew what the framing system looked like in areas where it remained concealed under layers of paneling and modern wallboard. Realizing the house was much older than they thought, the Lanes agreed with the volunteer team that small portions of the walls and ceiling should be uncovered for examination. The Lanes realized that removal of small areas of the modern elements would be destructive and require more work to replace. But they felt it was important to learn more, so they decided to proceed and hired Wayne Griffin to carefully remove small areas for the next study visit. Dating the house. It was during the first study visit that Dr. Carl Lounsbury, architectural historian from Colonial Williamsburg, recommended dendrochronology. Dendrochronology is a tree ring dating technique that has been used to date buildings across the globe since the 1970s. This scientific research tool can provide the precise felling dates for trees used in a building. To fell means to cut down. So the felling date is the day the tree was cut down. Wood core samples taken from a building are analyzed under a microscope where the individual tree growth rings are measured. Aided by a computerized system, the date is compared to tree ring chronologies from the geographic area. Samples from the same geographical area produce similar tree ring chronologies, much like a fingerprint. Years of excessive rainfall, for example, will produce wider tree ring growth than times of drought. The Lanes proceeded to hire Michael Worthington, proprietor of Oxford Tree Ring Laboratory, to conduct the dendrochronology study. Worthington would end up making a couple of trips to Edenton to take samples. Along with his effort, the architectural investigation team continued to explore. A local historian joined the team and began tracing the ownership history of the property. He spent many hours at the Chowan County Courthouse looking at county records such as property deeds and family papers. The local historian also found helpful information from online searches and trips to the state archives of North Carolina and Raleigh. The announcement. Shortly after 11 a.m. on Friday, January 11, 2013, a group of interested participants gathered in front of the small porch of the house. After an introduction by Steve Lane, Michael Worthington read the findings of his research and announced, "The felling date for the primary timbers used in this bent building is winter 1718 to 1719. The excited audience learned that they were standing in front of the oldest dated house still standing in North Carolina. The house was 300 years old. The 1718 house. The house of the 1718-1719 period measured 15 feet by 25 feet. It contained two rooms on the first floor and two half-story attic rooms above. Flanking both ends of the house were large exterior chimneys. Each chimney measured more than 8 feet in width, as indicated by the identical mortise and peg holes in the end-walled framing. Future architectural investigations may resolve the question of whether the chimneys were constructed of brick or were wooden, wood logs or slats and daubed with clay. In 1728, William Byrd II surveyed the area and wrote the following description about houses in the town. There may be 40 or 50 houses, most of them small and built without expense. A citizen here is counted extravagant if he has ambition enough to aspire to a brick chimney. William Byrd, Histories of the Dividing Line, 1728. Deciphering the complex architectural mysteries of this small house has been no easy task. This largely volunteer effort involved hundreds of hours of on-site architectural investigations, off-site research, meetings, lengthy discussions, study visits to look at other early buildings for comparison, and written reports. Historical research and archaeology have also played an essential part in our ongoing effort to better understand the development of the house and site. A special gift. On October 25, 2018, Steve Lane and his family donated the house to the Penelope Barker Foundation, a local organization. The foundation will undertake repairs, maintenance, and restoration work as the steward of this rare surviving heritage resource. Historical research and architectural investigations will continue along with written reports, articles, and publications. In time, the house will be open to the public. The Lanes and the Penelope Barker Foundation have opened up the home for special events and tours. Hundreds of visitors, including students, have experienced the excitement of exploring the inside of this 300-year-old house. This exciting discovery offers a rare glimpse into an all-but-lost period of architecture in North Carolina. This is an extraordinary opportunity to learn about construction techniques, materials, craftsmanship, and finishes in a 300-year-old building. The house can become a platform for a wide range of interpretation possibilities spanning three centuries, now moving into its fourth. This three-dimensional artifact also offers the opportunity to reveal how this house has survived and remained relevant to generations of owners. While the future may hold a discovery of an earlier structure, at this point, this is the oldest building still standing in North Carolina that has been scientifically dated by dendrochronology. Here are the captions for the photographs accompanying this article. In 2009, Stephen and Linda Lane purchased this property at 304 East Queen Street in Edenton. They planned to convert it into a rental home. What a surprise awaited them. Sketch by author Reed Thomas showing what North Carolina's oldest dated house might have looked like in 1718-1719, shown without the rear shed rooms and porch. Don Jordan examines the main roof cornice from the southeast shed room. A heavy accumulation of whitewash can be seen on the framing members. That was a big clue. Michael Worthington of Oxford Tree Ring Laboratory conducts dendrochronology sampling on the Lane House in 2012. Author Reed Thomas explains unique features of the Lane House during an open house event, the Edenton Pilgrimage Tour of Homes. There's a sidebar article accompanying this article called Nails by Mitch Wilds, who is the restoration branch supervisor at the North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office. In addition to dendrochronology, a building can also be dated by looking at the technology that was in use when it was constructed. Using changes in technology for dating is really no different from knowing that a rotary dial phone is older than the latest smartphone. If you think about it, you can easily make a pretty good guess that a photo of a guy texting on a smartphone was taken after the year 2000. As with changes in phone technology, changes in the production of one of the most basic building materials, a nail, can help date a building. Up until the beginning of the 1800s, all nails were handmade in a forge, a furnace where metal is heated to be shaped or formed, by specialized blacksmiths or nail makers. These nails were called hand-wrought nails. Each nail was pounded out individually, and the head was crafted by a nail maker. Up to a dozen enslaved laborers aged 10 to 21 operated Thomas Jefferson's nailery at his Monticello estate in Charlottesville, Virginia. The nails were sold in the neighborhood and in stores in the towns of Charlottesville and Stanton. In 1794, these laborers were making up to 10,000 nails a day. The early 1800s saw inventors trying to design machines that could make nails more efficiently. By the 1820s, they succeeded in creating machines that made nails by cutting sheets of iron and making the head. These are known as cut nails, and mass production drove hand-wrought nail makers out of business. Cut nails were used in virtually all building throughout the 1800s. In the 1890s, another change in technology occurred with the introduction of a nail made from a spool of steel wire. These wire nails became the predominant nail of the 20th century and are the type of nail you buy today in a hardware store. Looking closely at one of the smallest parts of a building can help determine if it was built in the 18th, 19th, or 20th century. There's a photograph with this article, and the caption reads, "Detail of hand-wrought nails and beaded weatherboarding that were removed from the Lane House for examination." And there is a diagram that shows four kinds of nails: a hand-wrought nail before circa 1800, a type A cut nail circa 1790s to 1820s, a type B cut nail circa 1810s to 1900s, and a wire nail circa 1890s to present. The next article is, "What makes a building or district historic?" This is written by Christy Brantley, who works for the State Historic Preservation Office as the Local Preservation Commission Certified Local Government Coordinator. She has a Bachelor of Science in American Studies from Barton College and a Master's of Art in History from East Carolina University. You probably walk past old houses or buildings every day, sometimes without even noticing. Maybe you've seen a house with a plaque by the door telling you the date it was built. Or maybe you've been to a historic site like Old Salem. What makes these buildings historic or special, and who decides? A building or district is considered historic by evaluating three things. Number one, age. In general, must be at least 50 years old. 2. Integrity. Must have the same form or shape and most of its original features and materials. For historic districts, most of the buildings must also retain integrity. 3. Significance. Must have one of the following: an association with an important event, an association with an important person, distinctive architectural characteristics, or potential to contribute historical information that helps us understand our past. The National Historic Preservation, or NHP, Act of 1966 helped build a partnership between federal, state, and local governments to protect and preserve historic buildings and districts. It also created the National Register of Historic Places and encouraged each individual state to establish a State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO. The National Register of Historic Places is a nationwide list of important historic properties that are worthy of preservation. It is administered by the National Park Service. North Carolina has approximately 3,000 properties on the National Register. The North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office administers federal and state preservation programs. It also assists private citizens with technical advice to preserve and protect historic properties. It also supports local government preservation commissions. The historic preservation commissions are created by local municipalities, counties, cities, or towns. There are more than 100 preservation commissions in North Carolina. What's the difference, national or local? A historic property can sometimes be both. The National Register of Historic Places is a federal government program. Approval to be on the list comes from the National Park Service. It's an honorary list. It may be eligible for tax credits. And property changes are generally not regulated. Some properties are subject to review if they receive federal funding, grants, or licenses. Local landmark designations are a local government program with approval coming from the local governing board through an ordinance, a law or regulation in a city or town, and has a type of local zoning, may be eligible for tax deferments, and property changes are regulated by the local Historic Preservation Commission. There's a photograph with this article, and it's captioned, "The Arnold House in Washington County is a classic example of an early 19th century house." Next up, Architecture 101, Identify Historic Properties in Your Community by Hannah S. Beckman Black, who is a lifelong historic building enthusiast. Originally from Erie, Pennsylvania, she earned a BA in Historic Preservation at the University of Mary Washington in 2012. In 2016, she joined the North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office. A relative newcomer to the state, Hannah enjoys her job because it allows her to learn about the history of North Carolina through our valuable historic sites and resources. My interest and passion for old buildings began at a very young age. As early as kindergarten, I remember observing the houses in my neighborhood in Erie, Pennsylvania, while on long walks with my mother, sister, and our dog, Lappy. Looking from side to side as we strolled down the sidewalk, I took notice of the forms, the materials, and the decorative details of each house we passed. They became like landmarks along our route, and I can still remember some of my favorite ones. At the time, I didn't know the words to identify these building features. I just found them fascinating to look at. Once I learned the vocabulary of historic buildings, I gained a new understanding of the buildings in my community because I better understood what I was looking at. Now, as I walk through neighborhoods in my new home of Raleigh, I find myself admiring the houses and their details with a new appreciation for what I am observing. When walking through your neighborhood or town, have you ever noticed decorative details on a building and wondered what they were called? Or why some buildings have certain features and others do not? In many cases, buildings have decorations that help identify and categorize them as a particular building style. Some buildings may be very plain but have a few subtle details that are commonly associated with a specific style. Before we jump ahead to house styles, take a moment to look at some building form basics. Architectural style. What is an architectural style? This means the combination of architectural elements that identify a building as part of a larger aesthetic. Sometimes you will see elements of several different styles in one building. This is because the progression of popular styles was not always neat and tidy, and sometimes styles overlapped. Buildings exhibiting these styles can be found in communities all across the country, not just here in North Carolina. How did these styles become popular in so many different places? Styles spread in a number of ways, but most commonly through the work of trained architects and pattern books. Pattern books provided builders and craftspeople with floor plans and elevation drawings that they could adapt to their own projects. Later, trade magazines or house plan books were used to spread these styles. This is truly just the beginning of all there is to learn about historic architecture. If this article has sparked your interest in architectural history and the identification of building styles, I have a few recommendations for further reading. 1. A Field Guide to American Houses Revised, the Definitive Guide to Identifying and Understanding America's Domestic Architecture by Virginia Savage McAllister, McAllester. North Carolina, number 2, North Carolina Architecture by Catherine W. Bishir, B-I-S-H-I-R. And 3, The Buildings of Main Street, A Guide to American Commercial Architecture from the American Association for State and Local History, written by Richard Longstreth, L-O-N-G-S-T-R-E-T-H. Here are the captions for the photographs with this article. House plan books like this one became popular in the early 1900s. The Home Plan Book, a collection of 50 architectural designs for homes of moderate cost, of which complete working drawings are available, plus advertisements, by Maurice D. Klein, 1924. Here in North Carolina, we commonly have what we call a triple A roof. This is a side gabled house, but with a third gable centered above the facade or front of the house. Each gable looks like the letter A, and there are three of them, so that's why we call it triple A. You can see the A shape here on the front of the Jesse Peel House located near Woodland in Northampton County. It was built circa 1870 for Jesse Peel, a prominent Quaker farmer in the area. And there's a sidebar definition of several of these terms. Width. The width of the house is described in bays. In most cases, each door or window on a single elevation of the first story counts as one bay. For example, the house here in the article has three bays. Building height is described in stories. A group of rooms or an area that forms one floor level of a building, both single and half stories. And there are drawings here that show one story, one and a half stories, two stories, and three stories. Roof types. There are several different roof types. Some of the most common ones are the front gable, side gable, cross gable, hipped, and flat roofs. Gable refers to the triangular outer wall formed when the roof pitches meet. And the seven roof types they show here are side gabled, front gabled, gambrel, with dual pitched gables, shed, which is half gabled, cross gabled, flat with eaves, and hipped. Now there's an accompanying article with house styles. There are many, many different styles found across the state, but let's take a look at six more common ones that you may find in your community. We have already covered three of these in a previous broadcast. The date ranges for each house indicate when these styles were most commonly built, but in North Carolina, these styles are sometimes being built long after their national popularity ended. The Tudor Revival from 1890 to 1940. The Tudor Revival style was loosely based on a variety of medieval English styles and features. In North Carolina, we refer to the smaller scale versions of these houses as period cottages. They have a steeply pitched roof, several overlapping gables, half timbering, rounded arched doors, a cast stone trim, and the use of multiple materials, patterned stone or brickwood, brickwork. The example shown is Lincote, which is in Tryon in Polk County, built between 1926 and 1928. And Craftsman Bungalow, 1905 to 1930. The Craftsman style developed in California. It was influenced by the English arts and crafts movement that emphasized handmade materials and harmony with nature. Low-pitched roof, tapered columns on brick or stone piers, overhanging eaves with exposed rafter tails, windows with four panes of glass over one, and dormers at the roof. We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long till next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.